Thank you, Jono, and good morning to everyone. And let me just say, on behalf of both myself and Parissa, it's such a privilege to be here, and we're so glad to have become a part of this family. And in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means. But I've always really enjoyed these days. In most churches at the beginning of the year, there's some sort of looking back and looking forward process. And this is something, of course, that the Psalms do all the time. They look back on the ways that God has helped Israel and the people of God so far, and the things that we look forward to Him doing in the future. And one of the things that really encourages me as we hear about all the last 2 years of COVID and stuff is that this is the fullest that I have seen this room, other than Christmas, for a really long time. And it just feels like we're getting back to normal. We don't know what is ahead, but we will celebrate every moment that we have. So I want to begin by just talking about the slide that is up on the screen. We have decided that the big picture theme for this year is becoming the people of God. And you pick up in that, in the same way that we look back and we look forward, that when we believe in Jesus, we do become part of the people of God. That's a done deal. But as we seek to grow and become holy and like Jesus, there is a process to this, and that's what we want to explore. But why do we do this in the first place? Why do we have, you know, a theme for 2021 and a theme for 2022? Well, as we go to the next slide, and I better find my little clicker thing here, some of you may remember from the 80s and 90s in the business world, there was this thing called the elevator pitch. And so here was the idea behind the elevator pitch. You had these two people, let's call them Brad and Chad for the sake of argument, and they meet on the ground floor of this big office building. It could just be one large corporation, or maybe it's a whole bunch of different businesses and offices, but they meet on the ground floor. They've never seen each other before, and that could go in two different ways. They could hop on the elevator, and I could say, "Hi, my name is Chad. Hi, my name is Brad. What are you up to today?" "Oh, you know, same old, you know, another day at the grindstone, another day, another dollar. How about you?" "Yeah, yeah, same thing. Well, look, hang in there. Hope it goes well. Yep, thanks, buddy." Ding, elevator, and off you go. Or it could go very differently. You hop on at the ground floor and you say, "Hi, I'm Chad, I'm Brad. Oh, what do you do?" "Well, it just so happens that I work in research and development, and we're on the edge of this cutting-edge product that we think is going to change and revolutionize the whole world." And I say, "Wow, that's really great to hear, because it just so happens that I am in strategic planning and marketing, and our whole thing is that we want to get big and good ideas out there to the whole world. Well, I need your card. I need your card. Let's talk." Ding, you get off the elevator. And the point is, if you believe in what you're doing, then you should be ready to talk about it. It's not just same old, another day, another dollar. We need to always have God's purposes and plans on our lips and to be ready to talk about them. And of course, this is nothing really new. If we get out of the gimmick of an elevator pitch, when someone comes to you and says, "Why are you a Christian? What do you believe?" You say, well, you could hand them the whole Bible and say, "We'll take this home and read it." Or you could say, "Oh, it's like it says in John 3:16 that God so loved the world." Or in Romans, that the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life. Right? Like, these are big ideas reduced down to a single point. And when we look at the question of, well, what is the church meant to do? And I remember some time ago sitting in a group of leaders and saying, I was just in this group of other church leaders from other churches, and they were all talking about what their vision was and their plans, and they said it very concisely. What is it that we're meant to be doing? And I said, well, my working assumption is every church has the same pitch. We've all been given the same job description. Jesus began his ministry by calling a bunch of disciples and then training his disciples. And at the very end of the scriptures, he's standing there with his disciples and he speaks to them what we now today call to be the Great Commission. "Now all authority in heaven on earth," Jesus says, "has been given to me. I'm the boss of the whole world. My kingdom will come, my will be done. You know, my company, my corporation is going to fill the whole earth. Therefore, this is what I want you to do as those who work for me. As I have made disciples of you, go make disciples of all people. First, baptize them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Then teach them to do all the things that I've taught you to do, and I will be with you, guiding you and helping you along the way. Now, in that, we're used to just hearing that as a great commission, but of course, there is this process. And I've always liked to say, in all the churches, there are these four things that are always involved. That means that we need to reach out to people in the first place, to people, family, friends, neighbors, university people, workmates, with the love of God. We need to draw them in. We want to eventually draw them into relationship with Jesus and also into the family of God. We want to build them up in their faith and teach them to obey the things that God has commanded, and then we want to send them out. And I was really chuffed in a previous church where the children's worker got onto this. And so she went and taught all of the children, and I didn't know she was going to do it, this little thing. You know, we are disciples. It takes a disciple to make a disciple. Therefore, we will reach out, draw in, build up, send out. Everyone, reach out, draw in, build up, send out. And the kids all got up in the front and they did this whole thing together. It takes a disciple to make a disciple. We'll reach out, draw in, build up, send out. I went, great, they've got it. They understand what it is that we are being called to do. And so that brings us to our theme, and it also brings us to our Bible reading today, which I'll just mention to you. 1 Peter chapter 2, from beginning and end, is built on the prophet Isaiah. We've just come out of that series. If you want to go back and read it for yourself from beginning to end, the whole thing is built around this. And so we're told that we are a chosen people. We are a royal priesthood. We are a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that we will declare the praises of him who's called us, and that we will shine as his light. You know, we will be like candle, you know, holders that hold up the light of Jesus into the whole world. This is what we're called to be. And of course, these are not new ideas. Jesus talked about these things. He said, you're going to be the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its flavor, it doesn't have much in its favor. So you got to stay salty. You got to remain holy. You got to be the people of God. And you are the light of the world. We just heard, called out of darkness into his wonderful light. Therefore, you're not meant to hide your light under a basket, but you are to let it shine so that people can see it. And we get used to hearing this, salt and light, yeah, yeah. But there are two really important ideas here that I want to unpack for us. When Jesus said, I'm going to make you the light of the world, like a city on top of a hill, guess what image he was drawing from? If you remember when we were doing the Isaiah series, Isaiah 49, I will make you a light to the nations. And church Bible scholars and church historians talk about the days when this structure that you see on the screen was actually still there. Now we have in the same spot the Dome of the Rock that people associate with Jerusalem. But once upon a time, there was the temple and what was called Herod's Temple. And it was seen to be one of the great human-made marvels of the ancient world. That courtyard that you could see, you could put several of our football stadiums inside of there. You could put a whole bunch of different football fields. This was like a big city park in the middle of Sydney where people gathered and the temple was in the middle of it. And I'm told, and the historians write about this, the ancient writers write about this, that if you were a day traveler traveling through the desert, Because in some ways, you know, Jerusalem was like this Las Vegas. If you've ever been there, you're traveling through the desert, and suddenly you go, what's that light up there in the distance, in the middle of the dark desert? Well, even in the daytime, because the temple was full of, you know, built with these great marble stones, and there was gold leafing all around, you would see this glimmer coming off of the temple of God, and you go, ah, we're almost at Jerusalem. I can see the light. I can see the city on a hill. And they didn't just say that there was a temple within the city. This was a city built around a temple. And so as you were walking towards Jerusalem, and even if you were there at night and the lights were all on, you'd say, these are those strange people. They don't have a whole bunch of idols and all of that stuff. They have their one God, and no one knows what they look like, except that the people of God gather in this temple, and they hear his words, and they worship him, and they try to live as his people, and you know who God is as you watch the people live and worship. He is known amongst his people. Jesus said, I will make you a light of the world, like a city on top of a hill, just like Jerusalem. And so Peter goes on to say, and it's not just about a temple with massive stones, and we know it was a great marvel. He said, you are being built like living stones into a spiritual building or a holy temple. But we also know that it wasn't just about the people gathered in Jerusalem and people coming together in a temple. I always think one of the really interesting moments in the book of Acts, which kind of tells the story of how the gospel got preached throughout the whole world, two key verses happen to be Acts 1:8 and Acts 8:1. Acts 1:8 and Acts 8:1. Acts 1:8 is a little bit like Jesus' Great Commission. He is speaking to his disciples, and he says, now you're going to be my witnesses, starting right here in Jerusalem, where Jesus did a lot of his preaching in the temple courts and where he spent the last days of his life and where he ascended up into heaven, all of these things, all these happening in Jerusalem. You will be my witness here in Jerusalem and in the surrounding area of Judea and up to those weird people up north in Samaria and all the way to the ends of the earth. That's Acts 1:8. Then in Acts 8:1, a really strange thing happens. Paul, who we know at this stage is Saul, the guy who becomes the great missionary and builds up the church, first of all tries to destroy the church. And there's the stoning of Stephen, and Paul oversees that entire thing, and a great persecution breaks out, and those thousands of Christians that were meeting in the temple court are scattered. What a disaster, right? When persecution hits and COVID hits and we have to think in different ways and do things, what in the world's going on? Except for this is exactly what God said was going to happen, right? Not just here in Jerusalem. And look, if all had gone well, I'm convinced they would have stayed in Jerusalem to that very day. And now every, you know, weekend we'd think, oh, it's time to go to church. Well, we need better book our flight and head off to Jerusalem. But that was never the plan. This great persecution went and scattered the church all around through Judea and up into Samaria and all throughout the Roman Empire. And so, when Peter writes to the church, if we went back just one chapter before our Bible reading, he says, Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to God's elect, God's chosen people, who are scattered throughout the provinces of Pontus and Galatia and Cappadocia and Asia and Bithynia. The church was scattered, but it was scattered all a part of God's plan, so that it would continue to be known in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And I want us to think a little bit about this, because sometimes I think that we look at the 21st century and we say, oh, what a disaster. You know, remember the good old days when we all used to meet in the temple and go to church together and there were no problems? Well, it was never really like that. You go back to the old days of Sydney, the good old days. You know, we can still go in the middle of Sydney and you can see this today. Where is the church? Where is St. Andrew's Cathedral? Well, when the Church of England was going to set up, it was going to set up right next to Town Hall, right? That's where it belongs. The two great buildings, the church and the state, and the QVB, if we want to pick up commerce, all right there in the center of Sydney, in the main shopping district. That's where it's all happening. The church and the state, they go together. But that's not really the way it is anymore. Where do people gather in Sydney today? Well, this is more or less what it looks like. We're still gathering. It's just that we're not in the temple and we're not in the cathedral. And statistics say on any given Sunday, you know, when we take holidays and stuff, Paris and I make it a point not to go to the local church on the Sunday, but to wander around and then we go, oh, this is where everyone is. This is where they all are. Okay, well, it's good to see that this is where they are. Now we know where to find them. Some of you will see, have seen this research, and we've just seen, you know, Sophie McCrindle, and we know of who these people are. But recent research said that, you know, conservatively speaking, the best we could say is that maybe 10 to 15% of Australians claim to be evangelical, and you can find them in a church maybe once a month. Now, I still think that's pretty generous. I would be very surprised if one in every 10 people that you meet on the street is a devoted follower of Christ that goes to church, you know, on most Sundays. I think 10% is doing pretty well. But it just means that the other 90% don't really have much at all to do with church. And so recently, we got together as elders, and I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but back in 2020, the church commissioned a group of people known as Reach Australia, and they came here and they sent little spies into the church just to watch what we do and how we operate, and they met with different groups of leaders, and they released a report. And like so many other churches in 2020, they're going to have their 2020 vision, and we were going to do all this stuff, and then we got sent into 2 years of lockdown. And that thing is, it's not that no one's looked at it, but it's kind of sat there at the edge of the table and not front and center. And so just in the last week or so, the elders and wives, we got together, and we began looking at that report again. And we are scheduling a date to get together with all our ministry leaders and to talk about that report and to look at some of the things that it has to say. And really, the big point of the whole thing is we're called to be the people of God, a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy people, people who will shine the light of Christ into the world. And if I could summarize the critical part of the document, because it had some good things to say, but the challenges it put forward to us is it said, there's a lot of stuff going on, but we're not very well aligned, and we need to be working together on this. We're not just a bunch of people who happen to share the same building for my ministry and your ministry, and we come together on Sunday. We need to act like a family that's working together. Or another word they used is, we need to turn up the missional heat. There's a flame there and there's a faint flicker, but if we're going to be the light of the world, we really need to turn up our missional heat. And to put it another way, we need to know that we're not just people who are called to go to church on Sunday, we are people who are called to be the church every single day. We're not just the city set on a hill, and we have a critical role. It's wonderful when we can gather and people can see who we are and how we worship and learn about our God, and it's been wonderful to have people come and join in. But since most people are maybe never going to step into a church, or they have no inclination to come here on Sunday, they've got other things to do, then the church needs to do what it was always called to do. Go. Go out into the world. You be God's people where lost people are. We don't
just go to church. We are church. We are the people of God, called to declare his glorious riches and salvation to all people and to shine like light into a dark world. And that's why it's really good for us to realize that if we go back to that living stone analogy, people don't really have any great desire to come into church buildings. I was once challenged by someone to say, what you should do one day is on your own, you should just go and decide to go and visit a mosque. And if you think, okay, well, hold on, I have a whole bunch of questions. I know that people who believe in God worship at the mosque, but am I allowed? What goes on inside a mosque? Am I going to be asked to do anything weird? Who are these people? Will they accept me? What's it like? And the person who challenged me about this said, and now you know how everyone out there feels when they think about going to church. Who are these people? What goes on inside of that building? Are they going to ask me to do weird things? Are there going to be things I feel uncomfortable with? I don't really know. I don't really feel that safe in there. People aren't looking for a place, you know, a warehouse in King's Park to gather on a Sunday. It's not on their agenda. But what they are looking for is community, living stones. And that's why I include this picture. There's just these moments in my life where you get to celebrate, you know, being involved in ministry. And when it was Christmas time and Hands and Feet ran its Christmas party, and one of the wonderful things, you know, Brad was mentioning that for a number of months we had to run Hands and Feet out in the car park. So people would pull through, we'd put something in the back of their car, we'd say, how are you? Good. And person after person, as that went on week after week, they said, oh, we're just missing being together. We can't wait to get back and be the community. And these aren't the people who come to this church. These are the people that this church has touched. And so, you know, as Josh and Solomon and Don and everyone else has started, you know, bringing the people back into the church again, unashamedly, we've started making sure that there is community time. And people get up and they share what they're thankful for, or their testimonies and all of that. And so when I was watching the program happen and some of our people up the front helping to lead songs and everyone singing together and hearing the story of Christmas, I said, this is good. And this is what people are looking for. In fact, remember in a previous church, I met a guy after church, and he said, this is my first time at church. And I said, oh, the first time at this church? He said, no, my first time at church. I said, you have never, ever been into a church in your whole life. He said, never. He was an overseas student. He said, in my whole life, I've never been to a church. And I said, I love meeting people like you, because you get to see it for the first time today. So please be honest. You know, don't hold anything back. Tell me what you think. And by that stage, we had cleared the chairs after the service, and morning tea was being set up, and coffee was being served, and the children were running all over the place. And he was looking around, and he goes, well, it's not what I expected. I said, well, tell me what you expected. And he goes, well, I figured, you know, if you were the priest or pastor or whatever they call you, that you would be all dressed up in a certain way, and that everything would be really somber, and everyone would kind of funnel in and do some things and then sort of funnel back out again, and then I'll hop in the car and go home. And he goes, I don't want to be disrespectful here. He said, but you've got like a community here. He said, this is like a giant family, and I'm watching parents taking care of one another's kids, and you're laughing and you're eating together. And honest to God, he said to me, this is actually really a great idea. He said, This is so innovative. He said, you should market this. He said, because I meet people out there all the time and they're really lonely. You should let people know that this is going on. This is so good. Never been to church in his life. Never heard about Jesus before. He said, I've met the people of God and they're surprisingly attractive. And there's some really good stuff going on. People don't need bricks and mortars. People need people. So we're not just called to be living stones and the people of God together. We're also called to be the salt of the earth. And this is taken from a book that always sat on our parents' shelf. You know, I think late 70s when I was a teenager. Out of the salt shaker and into the world. And the whole basis of this book is that salt doesn't do any good inside of the salt shaker. If everyone just is a Christian when we're here in the little salt shaker building, and we go out and we talk to people, how are you? Oh, yeah, how are you? Same old, another day, another dollar. And the stuff that happens in here, doesn't it ever translate out of there? If the salt has lost its flavor, doesn't have much in its favor. And so we got to stay salty because salt is an agent of change. It's different to the world. Light is an agent of change. It's different to the darkness. And we have to remain salty. And the church was scattered for a good reason. That's the nature of salt. And so if we were to go on to the next chapter of 1 Peter, Peter writes, in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord, and always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you. Always be prepared with your elevator pitch. One of the writers that I know has been used and referred to and in this church, Mike Frost, in his book, calls this, you need to live a questionable life. It's not going to do any good that you're always prepared to give an answer about the hope that is inside of you if you never demonstrate the hope to anyone else. If you walk around with your head down and you go on with the same banal banter that everyone else in the world does, and how's the weather, and oh yeah, another day, another dollar. If you have no hope within you, and if you don't let your light shine, and if the salt has lost its flavor, then no one is going to even be bothered to ask. But people ask the question when we revere Christ as Lord. And they say, what is it about you? Where does that hope come from? In the midst of all of this darkness and Omicron and Delta and what's happening in Russia and Ukraine, how do you maintain your hope? Well, I'm glad that you asked, because there's someone who has given me hope. Let me tell you about who he is. And it brings us back to our theme. Why have a theme like this? Because by the time that 2022 comes to end and I ask you, who are you? We need to be able to say, we are the people of God. We're a holy people. We're called to be Christ's priest to the world and to shine his light to all people. So during this time, we're going to break everything down. I'm going to run through this very, very quickly. I'm going to tell you how this is going to play itself out over the next four terms. We're going to begin the term, because we are the people of God, in the Gospels. I always think we need to keep the Gospels and Jesus first and foremost, because when you talk to even missionaries around the world, they're saying storytelling and stories about Jesus and who, what he did and who he is and his parables are a wonderful way of proclaiming the gospel to people. But if we don't know about these stories and if we can't retell these parables, then we're going to feel a bit lost. So we're going to spend a whole term looking at the stories, especially in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, because most scholars agree this was the gospel story that was being told throughout the first century. That's why these books all sound alike. This was the main story that was going around that people were repeating all of the time, and we need to learn to pick up on these key stories so that we're ready to tell people about them. Then we're going to go back into the Old Testament, and it's not just because we want to keep, you know, unity. We should keep reading the Bible from beginning to end, and we did leave off with Abraham. Now we're going to go on to Jacob's family. And I was really glad when one of our preachers, when we were going through the teaching series, said, have you really looked at the story of Jacob? We're meant to be like the people of God, but Jacob and his family are not a very good example. You know, I'm not going to give you the whole series now, but if you know anything about Jacob, he comes out holding on to his brother's heel. He and Esau have got this family feud going on, and it even divides, you know, the parents a little bit. And then Jacob has to run off because his brother's going to kill him. And then he ends up getting tricked by his uncle in the same way that he tricked his brother. And there's just all this deception amongst his wives. Yes, I said wives. And it goes on and on, even to the point when you get into the story of Joseph, the brothers go and sell him all off into slavery, which leads us into the Exodus, right? It's a dysfunctional family. And when I was growing up in Sunday school, I was always kind of told, we need to go and be like these faithful people, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And then you start reading them and you go, that's not who God called. He didn't look around for the best people and the most wonderful people and the most holy people and said, oh, I think I'll start with them. He began with dysfunctional people, dysfunctional families, broken people, sinful people, people exactly like me. Or the Apostle Paul, who started off scattering the church and trying to destroy it and then finished up building the church he once tried to destroy. And so we need to understand that there is a process to Jacob becoming Israel, which becomes the city on a hill and the holy nation. And we need to look at some doctrines. And this, you think, how in the world does this fit in? Because we need to know what we believe and why we believe it. And if we're going to talk about sin, if we're going to talk about salvation, if we're going to talk about heaven, we should talk about hell, we should at least know what that means. And these are the questions that people are going to ask you. Oh, when you say creation, do you think this? Oh, when you talk about heaven, do you mean this? When you talk about hell, what? And you, oh, I don't really know. And some years ago, I realized that I was in this church and I introduced this series. And someone said, I'm really glad we're doing a series on the basic Christian doctrines. I've never been in a church that has taught the basic Christian doctrines. And I scratched my head and I said, you know what? And in 20 years of ministry, I don't think I've ever done it. We need to know what we believe and why we believe it. And finally, we're going to finish off in 1 Thessalonians. And I love it just because here is this very persecuted, huddled little church. This is probably the very first letter that Paul ever writes to a church. He just introduces himself as Paul. Paul, that guy who just went and visited you guys, he's not referring to himself as the apostle. He got chased out of town. He's worried about this persecuted little mass of people and just realizes that they are persevering, that they are full of faith in the midst of all of the afflictions and things they're going through. And having just gone through 1 Corinthians together, which is kind of like the bad example of what not to do, I thought it would be really encouraging for us to finish off with 1 and 2 Thessalonians. So I just want to finish off by reading these verses. This is what it means to be the people of God. As you come to him, the living stone, yes, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus. For in Scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. To you who believe, this stone is precious, but to those who do not believe, the stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, and a stone that causes people to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. And they stumble because they disobey the message, which is what they were destined for. But you are a chosen people. You are a royal priesthood. You're a holy nation. You're God's special possession. So that you can declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Most people out there have heard words like mercy and grace and love a million times. They never know what it really means until they see it in action and they find out what it means in someone's life. So together, we're going to spend some time learning about these things. We're going to have a chance to sing a song which is based on these very words called Cornerstone. And then I'll come up and introduce communion, and at that stage, our live streamers will leave us.